WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And for those of you who didn't stay up until 2 in the morning watching the debate over the impeachment trial rules, here's the 30-second version. The Democrats offered 11 amendments that would have subpoenaed witnesses like John Bolton and documents like those from the Pentagon that could show exactly who ordered the Ukraine aid freeze and why people were freaking out about it. All 11 amendments were defeated by identical party line votes of 53 to 47. In about a week, the Democrats will have a chance to try for those subpoenas again. Official opening arguments begin today, 8 hours a day for 3 days each side. That's the 30-second version. But we'll try in our coverage here during the impeachment trial to look beyond some of the predictable and well-worn language from both sides to take a closer look at interesting specific issues that get raised along the way. We'll start right now with two of them. One is a catch-22 from the White House side that argues in the Senate that the Democrats should go to court to get their subpoenas for witnesses enforced, but they argue in court that the court has no jurisdiction over that. The other one is the Trump defense points out that for all the times the Democrats have said he engaged in bribery or a quid pro quo, neither of those terms appear in the articles of impeachment. As a bonus issue, how much emotion and accusation are allowed in the impeachment trial? We'll play a surprising clip of Chief Justice John Roberts from about 1 a.m, admonishing both sides to be more chill. Oh, and we will reveal the two beverages that senators may consume during the trial and ask why other drinks that are equally innocuous are prohibited. And we'll discuss a Washington Post report that some Democratic senators are now mulling a deal, Bolton and other White House witnesses, for testimony by one or more people named Biden. With me for this is Politico White House correspondent and deputy editor Anita Kumar. I know it's crazy there today, so we really appreciate you giving us this time. Thanks for coming on.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Let's take this bribery and quid pro quo question first. Trump and his lawyers are making the case that the Democrats talked a lot about bribery in the House hearings. Bribery is one of the impeachable crimes named in the Constitution. But they didn't use the word in the actual articles of impeachment, nor did they use the term quid pro quo. Here's Pat Cipollone, White House counsel, yesterday.
They sent you articles of impeachment that makes no claim of any violation of any law. By the way, you know what also doesn't? You can search high and low in the articles of impeachment. You know what it doesn't say? Quid pro quo. Because there wasn't any.
And again, bribery is one of the impeachable crimes named in the Constitution, but they did not use the word in the actual articles of impeachment. And as Cipollone said there, nor did they use the term quid pro quo. Do you know why not, Anita?
Well, I've talked to some. I don't know precisely why not. I can tell you what people are saying, which is some legal experts that deal with impeachment have said that there was some thought that if they used either of those terms, that they would get into sort of a debate on what, you know, the precise elements of those are. So the precise federal bribery statute, what does that mean? And do they want to get into the back and forth of whether this really was that or not? Same with quid pro quo. So I think the thinking was, at least from the people I talked to, is that they would avoid sort of that lawyerly back and forth on whether this really met those legal definitions or not. Because remember, they don't have to meet you know, a legal definition of a crime, that, you know, impeachment is different from a crime. And so I think there was some thinking, let's not get into that.
Here's a little of the language, because most people have not read the actual articles of impeachment that the House does use in Article 1. It says, using the powers of his high office, President Trump solicited the interference of a foreign government, Ukraine, in the 2020 United States presidential election. President Trump also sought to pressure the government of Ukraine to take these steps by conditioning official United States government acts of significant value to Ukraine on its public announcement of the investigations. President Trump engaged in this scheme or course of conduct for corrupt purposes in pursuit of personal political benefit. So, Anita, that amounts to bribery, or maybe extortion is a better word. It certainly amounts to a quid pro quo. Something for something is the rough translation from the Latin. When the article of impeachment says the president sought to pressure the government of Ukraine by conditioning, it uses the word conditioning, U.S. acts of value on their participation in Trump's corrupt purposes. So maybe it's just a rhetorical question, but what's the difference between those words and just saying bribery or quid pro quo?
Yeah, and I'll just go back to, I think that there is a difference in how we perceive what something is and the actual legal definition. So, you know, again, whether they would, you know, you're talking about what the word means, but, you know, the legal definition is a little bit different. So I think there was just some thinking they wouldn't get involved in that. But I will say that, you know, what Pat Cipollone said as you played is indicative of what a lot of Republicans are saying right now, and people in the White House and close to the White House are saying, why did you drop this language? Not in this, in the articles, but just, why are you not really using it anymore? You're not, remember when quid pro quo was we heard it 10 times a day, and now we don't really hear it that much. And so they're saying that that shows that their case is weak, and that they didn't prove what they said they would. So, you know, it has been used by the Republicans as a way to sort of say, hey, this isn't the case you thought it would be.
Though on the other hand, it is kind of splitting hairs on a technicality, since the Democrats do clearly accuse Trump of conditioning U.S. Aid to Ukraine on favors that they do for Trump. But let's go on to the other issue that I mentioned, whether the Senate trial is the right venue for subpoenas for witnesses and documents. Here again is White House counsel Pat Cipollone arguing that it's not.
They never subpoenaed Ambassador Bolton. They didn't try to call him in the House, and they withdrew the subpoena for Charles Kupperman before the judge could rule, and they asked that the case be mooted. And now they come here and they ask you to issue a subpoena for John Bolton. It's not right.
But here's a response from Democratic House Manager Adam Schiff.
The Trump Justice Department is in court in that case and in other cases arguing Congress cannot go to court to enforce its subpoenas. So when they say something about lawyer lawsuits, and they say there's nothing wrong with the House suing to get these witnesses to show up, and they should have sued to get them to show up, their own other lawyers are in court saying the House has no such right. They're in court saying you can't have lawyer lawsuits. So that argument cannot be made in both directions.
So there is an actual court case where the Democrats are trying to compel testimony that Trump is trying to block, as Adam Schiff refers to there. Anita, can you tell everybody what that case is?
I'm sorry.
It's the Don McGahn case.
Yeah,
right.
Right. It is. And so, I mean, let's just back up here for a minute. The House has been, the White House has not turned over things all year long on Ukraine and a variety of other things. And the House has sometimes gone to the court, as you mentioned, for this Don McGahn case and other cases saying these people should testify, we should get these documents. One problem is they haven't heard back fast enough for them to get this information to use it. There were some people that thought the House should wait and get more information before they make the decision. But the case you're referring to, it was an interesting one because Don McGahn, who was the White House counsel, had gone to the court and said, well, I have two conflicting people here. I have the White House telling me not to testify and the Congress telling me to testify. What should I do? And if you'll remember, several other White House officials or former White House officials tried to get onto that case and say, hey, I don't know what to do either. And so there was a lot of talk about that. But by the time that case came around, the judge said, well, this point is moot because the House has moved on and had sent that case to the Senate. Hmm. So, you know, it's just sort of they didn't really rule on that issue. You know, the case is at moot at a certain point because the House had moved on. There are some people who have said, why didn't the House wait? They possibly would have gotten more information both from the court forcing this and just more information that we've seen come out in the last few weeks. So it has been an interesting back and forth on some of these court cases.
And I guess the Democrats say they can't take the time to go through the appeals process through who knows how many levels, maybe up to the Supreme Court, and how long that would take if they're trying to prosecute the president for trying to steal or cheat in the 2020 election, and the 2020 election would be over by the time the question gets to court.
Right. I mean, you heard the Democrats late last year say this was really they had to move quickly. You know, they didn't want this to him to, you know, the president to engage in any other behavior like this. They wanted to stop everything. And so, you know, that makes sense. There's also a lot of thought that, you know, hey, the closer this gets to the election in November, that voters might start to say, yeah, we don't need to do this impeachment trial. Let's just wait till the election. The election's coming up in a few months. Why not just let him, let's see if he's reelected or not. You know, if the voters don't want him, they'll vote for someone else. And so, you know, there is that time constraint. And it does make sense. We, you know, the president's just had his 3-year anniversary. We're in the election year. So it's coming right up.
And for listeners' context, the Don McGahn case, Don McGahn was the former White House counsel, had the job that Pat Cipollone has now. And he testified in closed-door depositions to the Mueller investigation and said a lot of things that looked like Trump obstruction of justice in the Russia investigation. The House wanted McGahn to testify about that. The White House said no. And the House went to court to try to compel that testimony. And then the rest of the stuff that Anita was just describing happened. And so that was kind of a template for the Ukraine issue, even though it's separate from Mueller. And I guess if this was a court of law, a judge might say you can't have it both ways. You know, you can't argue that you should take this up in court and then argue that the court has no jurisdiction.
Right.
But
right.
Ultimately, yeah. This is not a court of law. And that's something we always have to remember as this impeachment trial goes on. Right.
Right. I mean, it's definitely not a court of law. It's definitely not without partisan politics. These are elected officials. It's definitely, you know, it's just a different procedure. And as I mentioned earlier, these aren't criminal charges per se. You know, you've seen the White House team push back push back in this trial and say, well, there's no crime here. Well, let's remember impeachment doesn't have to be about a crime. So there's a lot of differences between, a court trial and this impeachment trial.
Yeah, it's only been a day. Isn't that incredible?
I was about to say days, and it's been one day.
Like back in the 2020s when the impeachment trial began. And just to put a pin in it, this is all from the president's side, political rhetoric to keep enough Republican Americans feeling aggrieved on behalf of the president. And that's how viewers should be watching these arguments from the president's side, I think, just to make sure there aren't, you know, enough Fox News viewers flipping suddenly to make senators flip later. That's the game. Let's go on to this 1 a.m. gentle tongue lashing from Chief Justice Roberts, whose job it is to preside over the impeachment trial. First, here is some of what led up to it. We're going to play Jerry Nadler first. This is a Nadler clip from late last night, Judiciary Committee chairman and one of the impeachment managers making an accusation of lying.
It is beyond belief that the president claims monarchical powers. I can do whatever I want under Article 2, says he, and then acts on that. Defies everything. Defies the law to withhold aid from Ukraine, defies the law in a dozen different directions all the time, and lies about it all the time, and says to Mrs. Cipollone here to lie about it. These facts are undeniable.
And that prompted this response from Pat Cipollone.
Mr. Nadler, you owe an apology to the President of the United States and his family. You owe an apology to the Senate. But most of all, you owe an apology to the American people.
For using that kind of language. And so here is Chief Justice Roberts, surprising to many people that he got in the middle of that.
I think it is appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers and the President's counsel in equal terms to remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body. One reason it has earned that title is because its members avoid speaking in a manner and using language that is not conducive to civil discourse. In the 1905 Swain trial, a senator objected when one of the managers used the word pettifogging, and the presiding officer said the word ought not to have been used. I don't think we need to aspire to that high a standard, but I do think those addressing the Senate should remember where they are.
I think pettifogging is one of the words we have to bleep if anybody tries to say it on the kidding. But Anita, there was hot rhetoric and serial grievance airing all day. Why do you think the Chief Justice chose that moment to intervene?
Well, I will say that exchange was particularly tough. I mean, those were strong words. It also happened to be, you know, the middle of the night or one in the morning. And probably they were getting a little tired there. But, you know, maybe the Chief Justice was sick of hearing it all day. I do think that particular exchange was tough. Remember, we had been hearing more from Congressman Schiff than we had from Congressman Nadler to that point. Schiff had done most of that side or some of the other people. So, you know, maybe it was partly because of that and the language he used. But, yeah, I mean, it was tough. Sometimes people are forgetting that the Chief Justice is there because the senators are doing, you know, they're sitting there and they control the rules. And we're hearing both sides and they're kind of forgetting that he's presiding, but he's there and he's there for a reason.
Maybe we're all numb because of television and Twitter and everything to even the idea that there would be standards of discourse. You know, the trial is not a Fox News or MSNBC or CNN panel throwdown. But the panel throwdowns are what the American people are more used to hearing now. So what are the parameters supposed to be?
Yeah, you make a really good point because I think we have become numb in this Twitter era. But yeah, in the House and Senate, just like in other, you know, in state legislatures, there are rules about what you can and cannot say. And you're not supposed to be, of course, we don't generally have an impeachment trial going on. But for example, you're not supposed to be talking about the other another person like that. So when senators are on the floor, they're not supposed to be addressing each other and criticizing each other, if you will. I mean, if you ever are watching C-SPAN and you watch how Congress works, that's not what you're going to see. Though the words that you just played were pretty tough for the floor of the Senate. And so that's not something that we generally hear. Of course, we don't generally have a trial going on. So it is a different thing that's going on there. But, you know, as the Chief Justice says, that's just not how it's done there.
Listeners, if you have a question for Anita Kumar, Politico White House correspondent, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Just as a program note, we'll take this conversation to about the bottom of the hour. We will then move away from impeachment onto other things, although later in the program, we do have Washington Post White House correspondents Philip Rucker and Carol Lenig. We're going to talk about a bunch of things with them. They have a fascinating new book and have been, you know, some of the most dogged White House reporters, along with my current guest, since the beginning of the Trump administration. So that's coming up. We will have the first hour of all of it with Allison Stewart today, which was preempted yesterday, and then the impeachment trial, will resume at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Yesterday it was noon. Today it's 1 o'clock, and we will have that live here on WNYC. Now here's that Washington Post report on the possibility of a witness-for-witness deal. The Post writes about the Dems having resisted the idea of calling Joe or Hunter Biden as a distraction from the charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress by the president. But listen to this text from today's Washington Post. A small group of Democratic senators and aides has begun to question that logic, sounding out colleagues on whether to back a witness deal that could lead to testimony from former National Security Advisor John Bolton or other administration officials with possible firsthand knowledge of the Ukraine controversy, according to multiple Democratic officials who spoke on the condition of anonymity to describe the private discussions. These Democrats said they believe that having Hunter or possibly Joe Biden testify could backfire on Trump and the GOP, giving Biden and the party a platform to strike back and paint Republicans in the White House as obsessed with trying to damage one of Trump's 2020 presidential rivals. That from the Washington Post. Anita, can you confirm this yet at Politico?
I don't believe we can confirm it, but I think my colleagues on the Hill who are there have heard lots of talk this week that, there are a lot of senators who are saying yes, we should do this. And, a lot of Republicans, you saw Ted Cruz of Texas say, yes, we should have one witness for another witness. And so whether the Democrats welcome that or not is an interesting prospect. I mean, obviously, generally, people know what's probably going to happen with this trial, and the president's probably going to be acquitted. To me, the biggest question of this trial right now is, will there be any witnesses at all? And you saw, if you were watching late last night, that the Senate Republicans, Senate majority said, we're going to punt on that. We're going to wait until later to make that decision. Democrats wanted an answer right away, and they said, we'll wait until after the opening statements that from the House and the White House. So we're still waiting. And to me, that's really the biggest issue here. Are we going to hear from people we haven't heard from? Are we going to hear new information? So the prospect of possibly doing that with Joe or Hunter Biden also being subpoenaed is very interesting.
And it's interesting partly because there may be no other path to Bolton's and the other White House witnesses' testimony than this kind of a deal if they can't flip four Republican senators to give them a voting majority to call witnesses. And without that testimony, there seems to be close to zero chance of convicting the president. But I guess the calculation from the Democratic side is how much risk do Senate Democrats see in that shooting the moon approach, risk to Biden or risk to themselves?
Yeah, and it's interesting because we've seen these, I guess it's been months now that the Ukraine issue scandal has been out there, and Republicans have really thought, oh, Joe Biden's out, he's not going to be the nominee. All this stuff that people are talking about with his son, the allegations against his son, making money off of, his father's name, it's going to ruin him. He's not going to be the nominee. I've been hearing that from the White House, the Trump side, for months now. And guess what? Joe Biden's still the leading candidate. So it didn't really seem to hurt them in the way the Republicans thought. So maybe there is some thought that they could go there to the Senate and talk and testify, and it wouldn't hurt them. It wouldn't hurt the Democrats. It might hurt the Republicans.
Here's Adam Schiff appealing to the public via appealing to the Senate to put pressure on the senators to call John Bolton.
Do you want to hear from someone who was in the meetings, someone who described what the president did, this deal between Mulvaney and Sondland as a drug deal? Do you want to know why it was a drug deal? Do you want to ask him why it was a drug deal? Do you want to ask him why he repeatedly told people, go talk to the lawyers? You should want to know. They don't want you to know. They don't want you to know. The president doesn't want you to know. Can you really live up to the oath you've taken to be impartial and not know? I don't think you can.
Adam Schiff yesterday, but here's one reason why they might be investing too much hope in John Bolton, even if he does appear. Here's the president speaking to reporters this morning in Davos, Switzerland.
The problem with John is that it's a national security problem. You can't have somebody who's at national security And if you think about it, John, he knows some of my thoughts. He knows what I think about leaders. What happens if he reveals what I think about a certain leader and it's not very positive, and then I have to deal on behalf of the country? It's going to be very hard. It's going to make the job very hard. He knows other things. And I don't know if we left on the best of terms. I would say probably not, you know. And so you don't like people testifying when they didn't leave on good terms, and that was due to me, not due to him.
The president this morning. So, Anita, how do you think that would play out in the Senate trial if Bolton does agree to appear?
Well, I mean, what the president was saying there and what he's hinted at now a couple times is that he would invoke executive privilege. I don't think he uttered those words in what you just played, but that's basically what he's saying. And what that means is he can say, this person should not testify because, you know, he talked to me about my decision making, and you know, that would reveal too much, basically. And so if he does that, you know, perhaps the Democrats would take him to court over that issue. But he has hinted now a few times that that is the path they would go to for some of these top aides, including John Bolton. So they would have a very big fight on their hands. There is, I think, no way that the White House would have John Bolton testify. It's the reason that you've seen that, and Mick Mulvaney, the chief of staff, and others, he has not wanted them to testify. So I just don't think that they would go down that path. They'd have a very big fight on their hands, and I don't know how they'd solve that in this you know, short period of time.
Arik in Rockland County, you're on WNYC with Anita Kumar, White House correspondent for Politico. Hi, Arik.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had a couple of comments. One was, if you could just explain a little bit the technical breakdown of the 24 hours, how the back and forth, you know, is it 1 hour each side, and then or do they, each side gets 24 hours to give the whole presentation, and then the other side gets 24 hours?
That's a great question, and let's see if we can get Anita to explain that. And listeners, if you haven't been following this since yesterday's show, on yesterday's show we were talking about how each side, starting today, would have 24 hours to present their opening arguments. As of yesterday morning, it looked like McConnell was going to force through rules that made them do it in 2 days each side, so 12-hour days for 2 days in a row. They wound up splitting it into 3 days, so they can do 8 hours. The Democrats go first, 8 hours a day for the next 3 days.
Right.
Then the White House for 3 days. So, Anita, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. And Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans sort of said, okay, we won't force it to be over 2 days, because, you know, they had some vulnerable Republicans, more moderate Republicans, who said, no, that's just not, we shouldn't do it that way. We should give more time. So what you're going to see starting today is there's going to be 3 days that is allowed. They don't have to take that 3 days. The House, as you mentioned, will go first, and then the White House. And again, they don't have to take that 3 days. And what that means in the big picture here is that, you know, that could extend the trial a couple more days. We don't obviously know how long it's going to last, but they wanted it to be, the Senate Republicans and the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wanted it to be as quick as possible. And so that's basically what it was trying to do with that shortened time frame. And there were people on both sides, really, that said that was unfair. So then after that, just to give you some context, what's going to happen is the big question. There will be another vote to decide about witnesses. And so it'll be after those 6 days, if it is 6 days, that they decide whether there'll be witnesses. So then the witnesses will come or they won't. And then that's the end. And so it could be quite quick, or it could take a while.
Jean Marie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jean Marie.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for having me, and I'm glad that you're better, Brian. I am just really, really frightened about the 2020 election, because if we don't have, if he isn't removed, then, and the American people don't take this seriously, we're going to have serious interference again. I think we will have interference either way. But I feel like it's completely crazy to say, well, we'll wait until the 2020 election to find out how badly, you know, and leave this character in place to keep rigging the elections. And if this were a sport, if this were baseball, you wouldn't say, let's wait until the game's over and figure out if there was illegal signaling going on.
Right. Well, great analogy. And I wonder, Anita, how seriously the Democrats believe this argument that Jean Marie made, that they make over and over again, which is we have to impeach Trump rather than let the voters decide, because Trump is actively trying to, you know, solicit foreign interference and do other things that would try to rig the election. So we can't let him do that. But if Pence were if Pence became president, how different do we think Russian interference or their back channels to Ukraine or any other country to, you know, do whatever they want them to do would actually be?
Well, I think there's probably two things going on. I mean, one thing that's separate from President Trump and the vice president, you know, there was interference in the 2016 election. There have been reports that Russia and other countries are trying to interfere again. Separate from whatever President Trump did or didn't do, I think there's a lot of concern by the U.S. intelligence community that there are so many ways for Russia and other countries to interfere, with our elections, with voting, with disinformation and all that. And that's separate from whoever is in the White House. I think there's just concern, bipartisan concern, that we, the United States, has left itself vulnerable. And so there are a lot of people saying we're just not doing enough. The U.S. government is not doing enough to combat, and there needs to be more. But yes, I think the Democrats felt that separately, on President Trump. You remember last year, Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, said so many times, there's so many allegations about the president. I just don't know if we should go to impeachment. We've got to wait. And there were all these different allegations that had nothing to do with Ukraine. But once she heard about that, this foreign interference or possible foreign interference in 2020, she felt like that was an impeachable offense, and it took it to another level. And that's why you saw her act. She acted even though she knows it's very likely that President Trump is going to remain in office. But she felt it was that important to go ahead and send that message that people can't do that. Presidents can't act in that way. And so I think that's why you saw her do that, even though, most everybody thinks that he's going to remain in office and he will be on the ballot in November.
And if he's acquitted by the Senate and he can walk around saying, see, what I did was perfect, the phone call was perfect, everything I asked for was perfect, then it's in a way putting a U.S. Senate stamp of approval on a corrupt deal like Ukraine launching a misinformation campaign against Joe Biden in exchange for U.S. aid. And the majority of the U.S. Senate is going to say, yeah, that was perfect.
Right. And you're right. The Republicans, people close to the Trump campaign and President Trump that I've talked to are already talking about how the president is going to campaign on this and how he's going to use this as sort of vindication for his behavior and whatever, the behavior of his administration. So I think you're exactly right that is going to be something he's going to campaign on. And it's going to, that you're right. The majority of the Senate will say, his behavior was maybe not okay, but not impeachable. He doesn't need to be removed.
Well, if they even say that, it would be a step forward toward some semblance of grappling with what actually happened, compared to what we're seeing now, where they're trying to avoid that. Because if they don't at least say it was bad but not impeachable, if they don't at least say it was bad, then what they're really saying is you can use U.S. foreign policy, you can use U.S. government policy of whatever kind to trade for personal favors for your own personal or political gain.
Do you remember a couple months ago, we heard a couple senators say that, Republican senators
True.
Say that it wasn't great. And guess what? That's gone away. And that's because the president did not like that language and he got that message to them.
Mick Mulvaney said it too. Remember? We do it all the time. And I guess he had to walk that back. You know what I'm surprised about, though, along these lines? We're hearing the language from the Democrats be so singly focused on Ukraine when really, they probably wouldn't have gone to impeachment on this alone if it wasn't part of a pattern of what Trump did to solicit Russia interference and then happily benefit from it and try to look the other way for future Russian interference. And then this and kind of get away with it in the Mueller report and now do this again. So, I mean, it's really about a pattern of allegedly corrupt behavior on Trump's part. But I don't actually hear them making that big picture case.
No, and that's because there are a lot of more moderate House members, Democrats, who felt uncomfortable with making this anything but narrow. They wanted this to be extremely narrow, articles of impeachment only to address Ukraine, and they felt uncomfortable opening up to Russia, the Mueller investigation, and a variety of other things. I mean, remember, there's been a lot of other things that they have talked about, you know, his businesses, you know, profiting off his business, you know, the hush money payments to women. So there have been a talk about having a broad impeachment inquiry, and House Democrats, moderates, felt very uncomfortable with that. And so there was a lot of concern, and the House Speaker and House leadership felt like they had to keep it very narrow to get those votes.
So we'll continue to talk about the serious issues in impeachment, folks, as this goes on. But we'll reveal the two beverages that senators may consume during the trial and ask why other drinks that are equally innocuous are prohibited. So, Anita, I read that senators may only drink water or milk while at their desks. Now, you know, many young parents these days won't even feed cow's milk to their babies, but that's another show. But we're not talking about scotch or bourbon here. Why would milk be allowed but not, say, coffee or juice?
I don't know, but I saw many senators yesterday saying they didn't know how they were going to survive without coffee for those long hours. And perhaps a few of them needed it because at least one, maybe more than one, was shown sort of nodding off. And there were a lot of yawns late last night.
Does tangerine-infused seltzer count as water?
Great question. I don't know.
we may find out. All right. Anita Kumar, White House correspondent and deputy editor for Politico. Thank you so much.
Thank you.